Hello and welcome everyone to today's News Tonight, the weeknight news show where we're joined by special guests and our lovely patrons to discuss the day's gaming news. I'm your host, Derek Bittner, and I'm joined today by my good friends and GVG co-founders Ash Paulson and Steve Bowling, along with our very special guest, Jake James Lugo, content creator. Welcome, good sir.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Again, I'm a big fan of all of you. This is dope to be talking with all of you guys. You guys are great, so this is cool.
Thank you. Glad to have you on, honestly. So
yeah.
It's been a long time
coming. Well, hopefully you don't end this thinking, oh man, you never meet your heroes or they're never meet.
I'll tell you right now, we're starting off good because Derek is into Castlevania. I'm like, okay, we're gonna get along now. Like this.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, if you guys are aware of the news and they saw that Castlevania stuff had come up, of course we're talking about Castlevania. I don't care if these other guys don't have anything to talk about. I'll take a 15-minute segment by myself to talk about this. But yes, let's go ahead.
Wow.
Before we... What's that?
Oh, I just said, wow. Derek, yeah, exactly. Derek,
it's fair. I mean, you got Castlevania.
Hey,
Steve's got No More Heroes.
Are you talking to the insane
Man,
person who played every single Castlevania game locally released over the course of a year and a half, maybe almost 2 years. So I'm a little insane.
By the way, Legend of Jess asks if Jake's volume can be raised.
Yes, my volume can be raised like this.
Here, I can bump you up a little bit. Give me just a sec.
But in the meantime, we do want to say we have, of course, have a sponsor, and Mondays are always sponsored by the wonderful Game Orb. And the Game Orb, as we always say, is a fledgling channel focused mostly on Nintendo content. It's currently running Let's Plays of Super Mario 3D All-Stars, which you can no longer get. Splatoon 2, Smash Ultimate Super Mario 35, which you can no longer play. So I guess it's a blast from the past. And more. Subscribe to the Game Orb at the link in the description. And let's do a quick check because we were so close to 200 subs. Did we get to 200 subs? We are two away from 200 subs.
Make this happen.
We can do this. We can do this.
We got this.
Know, if we're not there next week, I'm going to be disappointed in all of you. No, they're not. But anyway, you can definitely subscribe to the Game Orb. We'll have a link in the description, as well as their friend whose YouTube channel is Galactic Reaper. Check them out as well. And as always, thank you so much for your support. And early congrats on hitting 200 subs, because I know we're going to do it.
Definitely.
So,
and of course, I did just post the link in the chat as well for those of you who are here. But please, yeah, go subscribe to the Game Orb and let's push them over 200. We're at 199. I just checked.
199.
Oh,
one
more.
Wow.
Yeah.
We might even 200. Be
one more. Oh, 200. There it is. Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
Just
there
hit
we go.
200.
That's what we're talking about.
Let's go,
okay, you guys are off the hook.
And they are. So now that Mario 35 is over, unfortunately, they now just started. I can see looking at the channel, they just started a Breath of the Wild. Playthrough, or at least are posting some Breath of the Wild videos. So definitely check those out as well. Yeah,
I'm waiting for my third Breath of the Wild playthrough for when we get a release date for Part 2. Once we have a release date for Part 2, and I know how long it's going to take, I think I'm going to finally jump back in and do it again. Just because I'm already feeling the need to. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, gentlemen.
Yeah, there was a decent bit of news over the weekend, and I guess let's go ahead and just start it off because. Let's get nuts for our first one and bring it up on the screen. All right. It's possible, maybe, don't know, probably unlikely, that a Smash Brothers Ultimate Fighters Pass Volume 2 will be adding a seventh challenger to the pack. According to Nintendo website data that suggests it, but doesn't confirm it, there might be something up, at least according to this Reddit post that came up, and actually I haven't even had a chance to really look at it. I was confirming some of the other content that we were looking at today for possible news stories. Ash, I know you've taken a bit closer look at this.
Yes.
So what do we got
here? So basically the shortish version of it is that every purchasable game or DLC or bundle, whatever, has its own code or ID inside Nintendo's official website. That includes fighter packs, Mii costumes, and the individual fighter passes. For Pass 2, the codes are ordered like basically a bunch of numbers ending with 967, which is Min Min, to 970, which is Pyra and Mithra, with codes 71 and 72 reserved for the unreleased packs 10 and 11, which of course makes sense. But the bonus ancient helm and gear that you get for pre-ordering the second pass, or purchasing it, sorry, has code 74, which means code 73 is currently blank. Now, that could be anything. It doesn't have to mean that a new fighter is coming, but it does suggest that there is some gap in the related content to Fighters Pass 2. And it may be nothing. Could be a mistake. Could be a miss ID. Who knows? But it could be something. And I hope it is. You guys saw me crossing my fingers. I want it to be something. I would love to be getting any more fighters, anything. Never want this game to end. So that's kind of what's going on here. So certainly don't take this as confirmation, but there could be a there. We just don't know yet.
Are you ready for the theory that'll make you sad?
I think I already know what it is, but go for it.
I think 73 will be like a rolled up all Smash DLC offering. Like, just
that's what I was thinking. Okay,
yeah,
you know, that makes sense.
A flat fee, and you get Fighters Pass 1 and 2 and all the related content for what, like $50 or something. But I think that it's more likely to be that. I would love it if it was a surprise additional fighter, but yeah, I'm not holding my breath.
Right. Yeah, so it's possible, but I think that's definitely a potential there. There's potential in that theory, Steve. So don't run away with excitement yet. I'm certainly not, but hey, so you're saying there's a chance is all I'm saying.
Not much of a chance, because I'm reading through more of this article. There's a lot of edits here. Like, some other regions actually have that 73.
Oh, no.
And others don't. So it's a sort of it almost seems like a regional thing. What do you think, JJ? What do you think, JJ?
I was going to say, it could be either a language pack if that's the case, because if it was a later number, I would believe then it may be like, okay, maybe that's like another character or something for down the line. But since it's like a gap in between two already like released characters like that, it makes it sense, like, either if it's like, you know, maybe something like extra like music or compatibility stuff for people that don't have it, so they could still play against people that do have that type of content. Like, that's the type of stuff I would think it would be.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... There is definitely that angle to it. So, Derek, you said it's the 73 exists in other countries. Do you know what it is in those other countries?
Let's see.
When trying to buy this third comment says that when you try to buy the 73 item on a U.S. Nintendo account, it says that the content is not available. But yes, it's true. So I hadn't seen that the third edit did not exist when I previously looked up this story. But it does seem as though there are different codes per region.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So
I don't know. There's, again, I've covered Smash rumors for a very long time at this point.
Yes, you have.
And each time there are patterns and codes and things that might be possible. and each time, patterns are just weirdly not a thing. Like, I've never seen people search for patterns and find them, but not have them mean anything in a game like this before. And
So set expectations super low.
I honestly don't. The more I look into this, the more I think it's not going to be anything too major. Maybe at best all pass thing, like season Fighter Pass 1 and 2.
Right.
But it just, I don't know.
You know,
Evernight Studio in the chat says, when you put in code 73 into a URL, the site shows currently not available, while other random numbers will say that it simply doesn't exist. Of course, you know, not that means anything necessarily either way, but, you know, yeah, it's interesting to speculate about, but there's certainly no there yet, and there may never be. Or if there is additional content announced down the road, it may very likely have nothing to do with this little weird numbering thing. So, who knows? It's just interesting to speculate about.
There's also the theory. I agree with Derek 100% that when people try to ascribe meaning to patterns, especially in the Smash community, it never works out. second take on this real quick. I wish that we had pushed Dustin on the show by now, because every time I think of stuff like this, I vividly remember all the times he's tweeted out the little picture of Rob holding the sign that says hype responsibly.
Yes.
And finally,
that's funny.
This could just very well be like Nintendo had to, you know, plan out the eShop offerings for Smash and say, okay, we roughly know how many characters we want, but maybe we don't have a firm number, so let's just put this Breath of the Wild armor pack out at ID 74, and we'll leave this many open for whatever we decide to do. And maybe right. they're just coming up one short, and that's reserved. And like you said, Ash, maybe we'll never see anything. I still am going to hold firm that it's most likely just some, you know, everything's done, and now we're going to offer everything at one price.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I did actually, there is one other angle to this that I unfortunately forgot to get into the doc, but I was researching this over the weekend, and apparently, I hadn't realized this, but apparently the Pyra and Mithra patch, the patch that added them to the game, also added more placeholder character slots for the character select screen than existed previously. Again, that by itself doesn't mean anything anyway, but hey, it's always fun to
that one to me is the most compelling thing I've heard so far. And that's right.
That's a little more compelling than this.
Yeah, because that takes an actual like level of effort that they didn't need to go to if they were 100% sure that they were done. And so, you know, and again, assuming that that's not adding slots for the fighters that we know are coming, I'm assuming that it's more than that.
Right.
That to me seems weird that you would take the development effort to add slots to the roster when the roster is supposedly complete. That to me is honestly the biggest thing. Again, don't get hyped, folks.
Right.
Don't let yourselves down.
Nope.
I will say that that's the most compelling piece of evidence.
Focus on those last two and don't think about it. But again, how are you feeling on this, JJ? Do you have hope?
I don't have hope. I don't have hype. I'm just gonna be meh. I think that's what we should all be. Just
until
meh.
We find
so that
out.
Way, when something does happen and it pops off and it's something crazy, we're ridiculously excited. Because again, we go through the same cycle as Nintendo fans, like all the time. We do it to ourselves, really.
Mm-hmm. Especially, in
I don't
Smash
have the ability like, to like, raise only one eyebrow. But if I did, the level of hype you should be at is just like
I can't
either. And then just the one eyebrow popping up, and about that it. I can't. I don't have that kind of control of
just
my face.
Stone face, just like
we obviously need to get The Rock on the show for moments like this.
Right, exactly. Yes. It's just stoic face, and then hearing that news and just going poop, and you're good.
Really quick, I want to extend a warm welcome in the chat to Nax Ethan, whose name I don't recognize, N-A-X Ethan. So, welcome to our live audience. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you in many more episodes. And I love your suggestion for a DLC character, Green Biker Dude from Mega Man X2's intro. I love it. I'm there with you.
He just dies immediately.
I love Nax Ethan's comments. So what you all are saying is Sora, Master Chief, Eggman, Crash, Spyro, and Klonoa are all getting in. Yep,
that's exactly
what we're saying
here. Sub-Zero. That's all I want. That's all I've been dying for. I've been saying it every time. I'm still in denial. If they somehow do that like that, I'll do a back. I'll take a lap around my house like that, and I'm good.
Nice.
Just got to jog this one off.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to something a little bit more concrete. Bring that subject up. All right. Studio quality versions of Super Mario RPG songs have resurfaced thanks to old promo videos for the game. And dear God,
it's so cool.
It's been a while since I played Mario RPG, but these songs are really high quality. And actually, it's funny, as I was listening to them for this story, right underneath, she says, has a comment. It's like, you can really feel the Kingdom Hearts vibes with the clarity there. And I'm like, as soon as you said it, it's like, you can totally get Kingdom Hearts out of that. Of course, it's Yoko Shimomura, so it makes sense. But there you go.
Exactly. I mean, I heard, you know, I retroactively heard Kingdom Hearts and Mario RPG soundtrack anyway, even on Super Nintendo, after kind of becoming more familiar with Shimomura's work through Kingdom Hearts. Even though I had, of course, previously played Mario RPG. But when you go back and you hear songs like Marry More and all these, there's just so many songs that clearly have Kingdom Hearts DNA in them. And obviously, as a huge video game music nerd, I love hearing these different studio quality versions of these songs. Like Forest Maze, like the back melody sounds a bit weird and it doesn't quite work, but at the same time, that's fascinating to me. Like hearing just these slightly different versions of these songs that have been ingrained into my brain for years and years and years over and over again.
Yeah, I have to say, as somebody who likes Super Mario RPG but hasn't played it in quite some time, like since it was, you know, on the SNES, hearing those songs, because I just played a clip for the folks in the audience here so they could listen to it, man, it's almost like unrecognizable to somebody who hasn't picked up the game in a really long time. It took a minute for it to click to me, and I was like, oh yeah, this is Mario RPG music. And you guys were just mentioning Kingdom Hearts as I was playing it. I was like, yeah, I definitely hear that here. So it's really cool. I love that we're getting kind of this weird... Well, we're in this weird timeline where, like, all our favorite video game music is coming out the way it was intended to be listened to in the first place, and it sounds objectionably better. It's just objectively far better composure, and it really highlights the limitations of 16-bit hardware.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's funny. I would say different, not better. I think maybe because I'm just so used to 8 and 16-bit music because I love it so much. That for me, it's definitely obviously clearer and it's higher grade, but it just comes off to me as different instead of necessarily better. But that's me.
Fair.
I think most people would probably agree with you, Steve.
I think it depends on how the nostalgia hits you. Because, for instance, I grew up with a Sega Master System, not a Mark III. And there is a clear distinction there because in Japan, the Mark III had a... just, again, objectively superior sound chip. And so a lot of my favorite old games sound better on the Japanese hardware. But because I grew up with the American stuff, I'm like, nope, this sounds off-putting and strange to me. Like, I can't play Phantasy Star with the FM sound. I have to turn it off. So real quick, JJ, did you play Super Mario RPG? Or are you a big fan of these
older games?
No, funny
enough, I didn't play Super Mario RPG back then. I dabbled with it because I had friends that played it and they like swore by it. They were really big fans. And I think that eventually at some point I'm going to have to sit down and play it. Like, there's a few select like big classics I just haven't like really sat down and just completed like that. And I think that some games like that, I think sometimes it could be better to play it later in life because you appreciate it better. You notice things a little bit better and you don't have those nostalgia glasses to them. And I think it works to the game's advantage. You know, it really makes it look like, okay, like, yeah, there was a lot of effort and energy that went into some of these big games like Super Mario RPG. And I think it's also another thing I should mention too, since you guys mentioned music with 8 and 16-bit music, I think there's an element of like imagination that goes into that when you're hearing that, you know, just like, you know, classics, like for me, like a really classic soundtrack that's 16-bit is Final Fantasy IV soundtrack or Final Fantasy II for here in America.
That
music is awesome. And when you hear an orchestral version of some of those tracks, like it's just like, pfft, it blows your mind sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds so fantastic. And I think that, you know, we all, you know, most of us that play games like that from that era, we play games with that element of like imagination. Like, okay, like imagine like if this was done like Final Fantasy Advent Children type of status, you know, and all of a sudden when we hear like renditions of it, it was like, yeah, like this is pretty dope. Like, it just only makes you appreciate that type of track or that type of music even more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's... Oh, go ahead, Derek.
I was going to say, sort of owing to... what Steve was saying before about sound chips and how certain things can sound better, but you grew up with a certain sound. We were talking before the show, you're a huge Castlevania fan as well. Castlevania 3 is the big example for that sort of thing for Castlevania. Which soundtrack do you prefer? The NES one or the Famicom one with the better sound?
You know what's
soundtrack?
Another one like that? Rondo of Blood. Rondo of Blood is like that. You know, between Dracula X and Rondo of Blood. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Do you have a certain one that you prefer just because you grew up with it or...
Honestly, no. Like, again, like, all the music's good, and again, the remixes are dope. Like, I mean, the later games, obviously, they have a little bit, like, of a leg up, you know, from the different hardware and stuff, but I think that, you know, once you hear them in context of, like, what's going on with the game or what you're playing at that moment, I think it just hits people different.
Mm. Oh, definitely. I mean, as much as I love to listen to game music outside of the context of the games they're in, one of the reasons one of the things that does for me is it transports me back to those pivotal moments in games, and I can make that connection, and it just enhances the music for me even more. And
oh yeah,
I totally hear what you're saying about FF4. Yeah, I mean, and I think it is those limitations, right? It is those limitations that the composers in the 8 and 16-bit days encountered that I find so fascinating about classic video game music because of the just ingenuity, the raw ingenuity of how these composers got around those technical limitations and still made you feel.
Look at Vampire
what
Killer.
A full orchestra would make
from
you
Castlevania.
Feel, right?
Look it's, at Vampire Killer. Yeah. That melody, that theme, that's iconic for a lot of people. And again, the Super Mario Bros. Themes, like a lot of those tracks from that era are iconic because they're simple, straightforward melodies that catch on to you. And like the renditions and the re-renditions of them over the years just make them so much better. And like they've always been good music. It's just they just get enhanced by all this other stuff years later. They're awesome.
Right. And what's kind of cool, too, is that... Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of cool, too, is that I found that ship music, and this is long before now, but ship music has kind of taken on its own, well, it's definitely taken on its own identity in the same way that pixel art has, right? Like, you, people used to say, oh, pixel art's old. Nobody wants old 2D pixelated games. It's all about polygon 3D. But now you see indie games all the time going for that specific 2D pixel art style because people love it. And it's the same thing with chiptune. You got games like Shovel Knight and Celeste and what have you that specifically go for that 8-bit, 16-bit chiptune style over something like fully orchestrated music because that's its own style now. And I just think that's the coolest thing.
Well, heck, the Analog Pocket, which is coming out, actually, they're offering a music cartridge for that so that you can use it to create chiptune music. Oh, right, so right.
That's a cool
new product. So, yeah, I've seen DJs using Game Boys in ways I don't understand.
I love hearing
Same.
Stuff. Yeah, that's so awesome.
I love watching. Like, at PAX, one of my favorite things is when you'll see DJs, like, live sequence music from Game Boys. That's the coolest, yep. Nerdiest, most awesome thing. And I just love people literally sequencing music out
I like
of
listening
video
to
game
Mega
hardware
Rant.
On
Mega
stage.
Rant's music that does that where he raps with it.
Mega Rant's awesome.
Mega Rant's awesome.
Mega Rant,
like,
Samus.
Stuff like that is cool.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So good.
Does that count as a Mega mention? I mean, it's
yeah,
pretty
sure.
close.
Yeah.
And Green Biker Dude did as well. So I think we already had our first Mega mention
yeah,
already.
Double dose of it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That yeah. happened quickly. Yeah. Either way, let's go ahead and move on to our next topic, which is just kind of cool. You know, it's kind of a feel-good. So the new Oregon Trail on Apple Arcade, which I wasn't even aware about, actually opens about it with a message about the game's commitment to Native American representation and inclusivity, which, I mean, say what you will about other races, that does not happen for Native Americans. It says, as you open it up, it says, in creating this new game in the beloved Oregon Trail series, we were determined to better depict Native American perspectives. For indigenous peoples, westward expansion was not an adventure, but an invasion. Recognizing this complex history, we have collaborated with Native American scholars to bring a new level of respectful representation to the game. For the first time, the game features Native American playable characters and stories celebrating the history and cultures of the peoples who first lived on this land and still live here today. That is fascinating.
That's
like
really
to take
cool.
Oregon
Love
Trail and
this.
Look at it from that angle. That's
I mean,
good.
This it's only good stuff. Yeah. I'm wrong with that.
It makes for a much more compelling game. I think that I love the idea of something that, you know, all of us are of the age where we grew up hearing this as a story of heroes, right? Mm-hmm. The narrative mm-hmm. we were given in our schooling was that
perseverance of man.
Exactly. It was a story
Manifest
of triumph,
destiny.
Right? And they never mm-hmm. talked about the people that were underfoot, you know, in terms of how they were treated. And so I love the idea of being able to shift the perspective and seeing this as this thing that everybody taught you was great sucked for a whole lot of people, and here's yeah. why. And I think that that is a valuable thing that, frankly, I wish wasn't relegated to Apple Arcade, because yeah. we all learned this in school. We played Oregon Trail in school as kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody
oh, yeah.
played
green
that.
Screen.
Let them play
that
this in
green
schools.
Screen Max, yeah. Apple IIs or whatever, yeah.
Oh, man. That, when you were just a kid and you're like, oh, load up on bullets and just shoot everything, and you're like, oh, wait, yeah,
that's
all
why
all
you love to
me.
Go hunting.
Crap.
And it's like you hate it when yeah. your party got dysentery. I remember everybody yeah. used to get so upset when that used to happen so randomly. Like, it was crazy.
Well, and like sometimes caulking the float would work, sometimes it wouldn't. You'd shoot like 4,000 pounds of beef and you could only carry back like 100. It was the mm-hmm. most ridiculous
like, well,
thing.
I'm just
going to
leave all that
Oregon
there.
Trail's classic. But yeah, I mean, this is just a classic, and this is such an important way to update it for 2021. And it's not something they had to do, but they did it, and it's so cool. And Native Americans really, really deserve the representation and the not just the olive branch. They deserve yeah. so much more than that, over,
seriously.
I mean, given what they've been put through. So I just love this. It's small, but it's something positive.
One of my yep. favorite PAX memories was in the free game room. They had an old PC where you could play the Oregon Trail, the original Oregon Trail. And kid you not, there's a guy playing and just doing a whole run. And there's a lineup of like 10, 15 people watching him play Oregon Trail, see if he could actually make it to the end.
And it was compelling. It was compelling to see them like deal with these certain things, going down the river in that last little bit, and you know, ultimately winning. It was like really cool to see see everybody react and like, ah, the dysentery happened and he lost somebody. You know, the ox.
That's a
happened.
Real nostalgia
like,
trip.
And you get the crowd reactions. Like you wouldn't think it for Oregon Trail, but I think it's for our age group. The game kind of like you don't even think about it as an educational game. It's just like one of those challenge survival mm-hmm. games. And yeah. That which makes me really intrigued about how it plays from the Native American perspective, since you're not traveling anywhere. Like you just have to deal with these white people coming through your land. And I don't know. I don't even know what you do. Like I'm kind of intrigued by what you actually do as a Native American character.
Yeah. Again, Apple Arcade is turning out to be a pretty good value, it turns out. I'm surprised by that, because I Same. Don't think of my phone as a destination for great games. But, I mean, we've got Fantasian. We've got this now. It's worth picking up and checking out. I might have to check out, I guess Oregon Trail's out now. Fantasian is out now, too, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I think so. I got to check
I
out
got
both.
Work to do.
I remember someone talking about
I've had an Apple Arcade subscription that I've been meaning to cancel after Shantae, but I forgot to cancel it. And, of course, I'm just paying for it, which is ridiculous. But now I have a reason to keep it going, because I do at least want to check out one. I want to check out both of these. So Eddie Beals in the chat says, this is a cool spin. I want a cooking spinoff called The Oregano Trail, to which Azran replied, I see your oregano and raise you an Ace Attorney crossover, The Oregon Trial. I love what you guys are doing with
God.
This. It's great.
Love it.
Oh, jeez. I like the Fantasy Thinker fan. Is Oregon Trail the first roguelike? I don't think it's the first, but it's certainly one of the... It's certainly,
I mean, isn't Rogue the first roguelike?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just point that one out. Sorry, guys.
Technically?
I mean, I think most people think of... they don't even realize Rogue is a game at this point.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, man, in my, like, what, early... elementary school, like first, second grade, middle school, whatever. That was it. Like we there was one computer per classroom. It was like an old green screen Apple II mm-hmm. or something. And if you could get on that computer for the lunch break and play Oregon Trail or Number Munchers or whatever, you were popular kid in class.
Hit me with the nostalgia trip, because I'd say right now, me and you played the same games, because I played Oregon Trail, I played Number
nice.
Munchers, I played Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego,
yep.
I played the Mark of Zorro or the Mask of Zorro.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, like that was a trip, because I used to do the same thing, but for me it was kindergarten, first grade that we did that stuff. We had a computer lab, so every like, I don't know, like maybe towards the afternoon
yeah.
or something before lunch, we would go there and we would have like a whole like hour of being able to go on like all these computers and just switch out floppy disk and stuff and just play whatever.
Yeah.
And we had the almanac for Carmen San Diego, this big freaking almanac that you never used except for that.
Uh-huh.
So it's
yeah.
crazy.
I remember those days. There's something
same.
Magical about it, I guess.
All right, times.
Well, let's go ahead and move on to our next topic, which could be awesome. So, Mortal Kombat creator Ed Boon kind of mused on Twitter today. They got a lot of people talking, asking if there are enough well-known giant monsters like King Kong and Godzilla to make a monster fighting game. Yes, there
Do
are.
Do it, Boon. Get this man some money right now, please.
Just in Godzilla alone, there are
so.
Godzilla-specific fighting games. If you got to go across all of them,
oh my God.
You're set. And I actually saw somebody respond to this and thinking, just you know what WB owns, which, hey, that's what NetherRealm was with, WB Games. They have access to Godzilla right now. They have access to Kong. So there's all these things they can grab to make.
I swear to God, if they could somehow get the rights to Gamera and some of the other monsters for WB from Toho and stuff, that would make an amazing fighting game. Like, for real. Especially with NetherRealms, the helm of that, and they could just make it, like, really gritty and really crazy like that. Oh, my God. That would sell gangbusters. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and as some folks have already pointed... Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say that a friend of the show, Matt McMuscles, pointed out directly under that tweet... Legendary/Warner Brothers has access to all of Toho's properties. They have Jaegers and Kaiju from Pacific Rim. They have the monster from Cloverfield. They have the monsters from Rampage, the Midway game.
Do it. Do it.
And then, they have access to Gamera, Ultraman.
they actually have Gamera, right?
Oh,
okay.
Oh man.
Get this man some money.
Or we can have Jet Jaguar versus Ultraman.
Well, and as some folks have pointed out, I mean, not only are there enough monsters to do this, there have been already, because Infogrames actually came out with Godzilla Destroy All Monsters Melee back in 2002 on the GameCube and Xbox. And that game already, I'm looking at the roster right now, it's around 12 monsters. Two versions of Godzilla, Mecha King Ghidorah, Gigan.
I know, like they had like multiple games and sequels of that same thing at one point. I know that like did that was really fun.
Like I don't know much about giant monsters or kaiju. I think they're cool. I don't know a lot about them. But look, if they could make a game with 12 or so playable characters back in 2002, Ed Boon could certainly justify one today in 2021.
I mean, I'm kind of amazed that Ed Boon hasn't made a horror movie fighting game.
Me too.
With all the guest stars he's gotten from Mortal Kombat.
You know what, though? I think that that kind of veers into Mortal Kombat's lane quite a bit. I would rather see those... I would rather see him, I should say, continue to put horror movie characters into Mortal Kombat because they're right at home there. I mean, you know, and plus, I just love the idea of like Freddy killing Scorpion or something like that. Like the fatalities in Mortal Kombat are comical. I think that they're really gross sometimes, but mostly they're hilarious.
You realize how creative he could get with the kaijus doing that, like any sort of like things, like you know, just destroying.
I was thinking about that, like impale a kaiju like on a building or something. Or what I really want though, and I'm just gonna hope that I can wish this into existence. If we get a kaiju fighting game, I want at least one character to very obviously be a dude in a rubber suit. Like I want one of them to just look bad.
Make it costumes.
And I also want
extra costumes. Like
make
that.
Him the one that can do Godzilla's like tail kick.
Oh yeah, the jumping or the dance as a victory dance.
Oh hell yeah! I also want a stage that is very obviously made of like cardboard. Just give me a low
budget
character. Like a
Showa era Godzilla stage. Oh, that'd be so
cool. Low budget character, low budget stage. That will be one of the funniest games I've ever played. I mean, I also want just the serious full on visual showcase that Netherrealm could do with this stuff, but I also just want some fun stuff in there.
Heck, they make a story mode out of this going Netherrealm. What kind of story would they come up with? That'd be wild.
Oh man, Eduardo Tena says if they went the extra mile and added stuff like Gundam and Evangelion, it'd be damn perfect. That would be
wild
to have
awesome
Evas
collab.
And Angels in such a game like this.
Oh man, if you're going to do that, you have to get the Megazord from Power Rangers. I don't care which one.
Yeah.
All of them.
It's funny because I think these things are wildly ranging in sizes, so I'm curious how they'd actually, you know, like some of them would be really short compared to others.
This is kind of adjacent to the topic, but we were talking about how we're surprised that Ed Boon hasn't made a horror game character or a fighting game yet. And I agree, but I also really, and no one, I'm sure very few people would want to do this. I don't think it would have wide appeal, but I wish he could make a Ninja Turtles fighting game only because I'm still gobsmacked by how perfectly the turtles are represented in Injustice 2.
Yeah.
They are perfect. Like, actually perfect. And
I'm surprised
they
never got
I'd
Shredder as like extra DLC with that. Like that would have been sweet.
Right.
Like
And
I just like take that representation of the turtles and Injustice and just extrapolate that into a full fighting game with Shredder, Bebop, Rocksteady, Toka, Razar,
Casey Jones,
April, every
Sagi, Jimbo. There's a ton
Splinter.
Of turtles characters you can do.
Yeah.
I actually saw a webcomic from a while back. I forget which one it was. Saying like, you know, the turtles are the perfect for this open world game, switching between the four of them and going through New York and doing a whole turtles big adventure. But instead, we keep getting beat 'em ups, which are great. But it also made me think, it's like, a TMNT Spider-Man like game. That would be
for
cool.
For a while, if you remember, Rocksteady was set to do a Turtles game. Like, people kept saying that for, like, a long time. It ended up being not true, but, like, imagine that level of, like, handling. That'd be amazing.
Right.
What is the traversal mechanic for a Turtles game, though? Are we talking the turtle van, or how do you get around fast?
Ninja running across
sewers,
rooftops,
quick travel
in
the sewers.
Just,
I don't know why,
ninja
but
running
I think you'd have to have a smaller section of New York.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
That's fair. Because I was going to say,
the turtle blimp!
How is that better than the turtle van, man?
You do something like
you got
that.
The turtle van, yeah. Maybe once you, Shredder isn't the actual villain and you beat him halfway through, then you get the Technodrome and you can travel underneath.
Oh my God,
guys,
so awesome.
We could have a whole ass discussion about this. Oh my God, I'm losing it over here. Oh man.
The game, Ninja Turtles.
Oh, man, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
I want it. Okay. While we're dreaming about that, oh yeah, sewers are your fast travel. That's a good point.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Awesome. And Jared Edinger asks if I've seen the TMNT versus Justice League, an awesome fan-made fighter. I haven't, but I will type that down to check it out after the show. I want to see what that's all about.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, this is a very interesting one, so let's go ahead and put that up on the screen. So, the Game Data Library has offered a rare look at the original NES version of the first Seiken Densetsu, or as it became known here, Final Fantasy Adventure, that was actually planned to release by the end of April 1987, before it was repurposed into what we know as Final Fantasy Adventure. And this is fascinating stuff, because yeah. It seems much more traditional in how it's set up. Like, it's a four-person party all on screen. According to this, it was supposed to be this crazy ambitious RPG meant to release in five parts, with part three meant to release by the end of the year. And they said apparently Square planned to release the game on five discs, but not all at the same time. It's kind of almost an early episodic game planned for the Famicom disc system, and just ended up, I guess, scaling back and ended up with Adventure. But kind of crazy that Seiken Densetsu started out as just such an ambitious game, and I don't even recognize it as what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing is, too, I'm looking at this game was going to retail for $30, which seems really weird to me. 3,400 yen. And by the way, we're talking Famicom Disk System discs, right?
I think so.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Because I threw a little bit of a bigger screenshot on the screen for everybody to look. But yeah, I can't think of another RPG on the Famicom or NES where you saw the whole party walking. But I wasn't a big NES RPG guy either.
I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I can't either, really.
The only other one I could probably maybe think of besides Final Fantasy would be Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest.
Of course, Dragon 1, 2. Yeah, Dragon Quest 1 through 4. But yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Beyond that, though, I'm trying to think. I mean,
there were lots of different one-offs.
There were Star Tropics 1 and 2, Mother 1, of course, Earthbound Beginnings. But generally, yeah, I agree. And this is just so fascinating to me, given what we know what Seiken Densetsu ultimately turned into. First Final Fantasy Adventure on the Game Boy, and then the one everyone knows, Secret of Mana, on Super NES. And now, of course, with the collection of Mana, we also have Seiken Densetsu 3 playable in English over here now. But just thinking of those three games and comparing that against these screenshots, it's so fascinating to me how the game evolved. And what really gets me is that this was apparently going to release by the end of April 1987. Final Fantasy Adventure didn't come out on Game Boy until 1991, I think. So this was a concept in Square's catalog long before we actually ever saw it come to market.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was to the point that they were willing to show it off somewhat publicly, though. This is from what's the source on this? Is this a magazine or?
I believe so. Let's see. It was Game Data Library on Twitter.
They didn't say what the magazine was, though.
Yeah, but the credit for this discovery, they say, goes to Gaming Alexandry, which are uncovering these old magazines. So it is an old magazine. Okay.
So, I mean, that I thought this was, like, officially
released out there. Like, I didn't know, like, it was from magazines. I always love hearing stories and seeing stuff like this when it comes from the company themselves, where they're just like, hey, look at this, like, old stuff from, like, some of your favorite classics back in the day. Like, I just love seeing things like that.
Okay, I found it. So this is the March 20th, 1987 issue of Famitsu. Oh,
I mean, that's crazy when you think about it.
Right?
Because that means that Famitsu, presumably, either got to go hands-on with this game or saw it in person at some point. I mean, because back in the day, you didn't just hop on a website and download assets, you know, like you had to see this game somehow.
Right.
So they sent over a tape or screenshots or whatever, but that means that Square had to be confident that this game was going to release in this fashion. It's not like it's a prototype. They just has been hidden away for years. This had to be a playable build of this.
Maybe they had somebody go over to their offices to play it at some point, possibly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean,
guess so.
To
write
that up. I don't pretend to know what the industry was like in the '80s. I was 5.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was only two at this point, so yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a full page ad for the game that shows what the planned subtitle would have been in English, and it would have been Seiken Densetsu, The Emergence of Excalibur. This is also interesting. I didn't know any of this. This is so cool. Well,
it's really cool because they have just looking over Gaming Alexandria's other stuff. They looking over these old Famitsu articles. One, you can get this magazine for 290 yen, which seems so cheap. Two, the front page was showing off has artwork of a sort of a fun version of Dragon Quest II, which showed you when this game was kind of coming out and how ambitious it was. Dragon Quest III wasn't even out yet at this point. But they also had like claymation stuff of Adventures of Lolo, a comic for the Oppo Oppo, or I think it's like Fantasy Zone, and that even like Zone, tip stuff for Zelda 2. That's how early on this was.
Wow. Right.
That is crazy. I mean, wild. I would have loved to have seen this version, and I'm just going to put this in my bucket of hopes of things that eventually get leaked somehow. just because this would be a really, really cool thing to see. I wonder if maybe it just didn't run well on the Famicom or something, or I don't know. It's impossible to predict why Square does the things they do, but
might have been too ambitious.
I personally would have loved this. This looks a lot like Phantasy Star for the Sega Master System, which is one of my favorite games of all time. So maybe someday we'll see this prototype see the light of day, hopefully.
Right. Well, what's also interesting is, if I remember correctly, there's an interesting parallel with Secret of Mana, because Secret of Mana was originally going to be developed for the Nintendo PlayStation CD add-on, but when that fell through, thanks to Nintendo acting like fools at the time, it got repurposed into the Super Nintendo game we know and love today. But it was originally much bigger in scope and was going to be made for that PlayStation CD add-on. So it's kind of a weird, obviously it wasn't planned out like that, but it's kind of a weird parallel between Secret of Mana and what ultimately happened with the original Seiken Densetsu.
Man, there's been a lot of interesting stuff coming out. I'm just scrolling through this Twitter. Sorry, looking through this. April 2nd, VG Densetsu tweeted out from the original, the graphic designer Kazuko Shibuya, who worked on Final Fantasy VI, presented an early version of Tina, or Terra sprite, from Final Fantasy VI.
I retweeted that the other day.
Did you? Okay.
So cool.
With her being blonde and whatnot, and completely different outfit, like that's
blonde and
wild to see all this old stuff.
Mm. I love seeing
it's a
stuff
really
like
cool
that.
Twitter account. Same,
huh? Cool. Blast in the past there. Tell you what,
Eddie Beale says, "Hey, hold up, go over those juicy Zelda 2 tips. I still haven't beaten it."
I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we got to move on to something that Steve is a little excited about. Maybe. Just a little bit.
Oh, just a bit.
Yes! I'm so
Steve's ready.
Fucking excited.
Yeah, that was his ready face.
Wait. No more Heroes 3, man. I'm stealing this from you, Derek.
Go ahead. Take it.
No more Heroes 3. There's a presentation April 8th. Turns out to be 5 a.m. Pacific time. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to be online streaming this thing. I am way, way, way too hyped for this. I've played through No More Heroes 1, 2, Travis Strikes Again, and I am... I need No More Heroes 3 in my veins right now. So if they tell me I can see more of it at 5 a.m. Pacific, I'll be there. I'll be there right here on GVG live streaming it half dead.
I'll be there with you. I'll bring
mostly dead.
yeah, probably mostly dead. But yeah, man, I can't wait. I don't even care what they show me at this point. We know that it looks a lot more inspired. Now that I've played through all of the entries in the series again, what I've seen of No More Heroes 3 seems to lean a lot more toward No More Heroes 1 in terms of vibe and aesthetic. I forgot just how different visually and presentation wise those two games are, the two mainline games. Like, one looks a lot more experimental with its art style, whereas 2, for the time it was released in, is way more conventional. It feels like you're run-of-the-mill, from a visual perspective, type of game from back in those days. But No More Heroes 1, you know, 3 seems to have, like, the more cel-shaded-looking aesthetic to it for its visuals. There's implications that you'll be back in the open world. You're definitely still in Santa Destroy. The little bits they've shown of gameplay have shown that Travis is still at the hotel, or the motel, right? Which is weird because he's married and has kids. But whatever. There's a lot though that is still. I mean, this is all stuff people have cherry picked from 5 seconds of actual gameplay video that has been shown. Mm. So I am extremely eager to see. I'm hoping we get actual gameplay. I know that there's a VTuber involved in this. There's a guy named Mafia involved with this, which is a very Suda 51 kind of move.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't wait. I am dying to see more of this game. It is probably my most anticipated release of this year. So if we can get even just a minute of gameplay, I'll be really happy. I'm dying to see more. Join me 4/8 at 5 a.m. Pacific. I will live stream this thing on GVG. Ash and Derek are welcome to come, but I'll be there even if they're not.
Oh, I'll be there. No, I'm like a casual No More Heroes fan. I still want to be there and just, you know, be in the radiation of your hype. I just want to like soak in that hype with you. And I think that would be a lot of fun. I'm excited to see you excited. And so I definitely want to be there. Be there for it. And as Ren says in the chat, when No More Heroes 3 releases, some say Steve Bowling's beam katana grew 3 sizes that
day. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Wow. What constitutes a size?
That's a good point. We're not going to get into that.
That's post-show content.
That Mafia Kajita is apparently the MC of this whole thing. And, man, Hololive really taking off with their VTubers as the it's apparently Sushiro Botan is our VTuber taking part in this.
I mean, I will say that there's some good overlap there. Like, the type of person that would love a VTuber would also like the type of fan service that frequently appears in No More Heroes.
That's true. Oh,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's interesting to see
cross promotion.
It is, and we're starting to see this more and more because last week we reported on how Microsoft is using VTubers to promote Xbox Game Pass Japan. Now we have this, and there was also a story we were going to talk about today that ultimately got cut just for room or space for other stories, but that Disgaea 6's DLC is going to feature VTubers as party members. And I don't know exactly how that works, but it's going to feature Disgaea 6 DLC is going to feature Hololive VTubers as party members. So this is becoming a bigger thing in terms of cross promoting.
At least in Japan,
VTubers
it makes sense. If Miku took off like she did, having a lot of them playing games and doing that technology, yeah, VTubers are going to be huge.
Yeah,
true,
definitely.
Yep.
And right. Jared Edinger makes a good point. Travis Touchdown would definitely want a VTuber presenting his game.
I feel like there's going to be a joke in this game about that. Like, somehow.
There
like,
has to be.
It's Suda. It's just like the otaku culture he likes poking fun with and just like having a laugh with. It just makes sense. Like, this game's going to be fun. This is going to make us laugh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I fully anticipate. I love the subtle fourth wall breaking they do all over the No More Heroes series, and I definitely see him making some references to you know, modern pop culture in this game, so we'll see. So, yeah, but I don't want to go too far into spoiler territory for No More Heroes 2, but
yeah, definitely join us on
a scene that would be
though,
just as appropriate with a VTuber as with the anime girl that he's involved with. Let's just
put
it that way.
Okay. I see.
All right, well, nice. Let's move on to our next story, and wow, this one's cool. All right, so Castlevania Resurrection, a prototype for the Dreamcast, has been unearthed after 22 years. There was actually, it's the first Dreamcast installment of Castlevania was going to be placed on a definite hold due to a lack of resources. And basically, it was going to be a 3D Castlevania starring Sonya Belmont from Castlevania Legends. Who knows if they're going to stick with that continuity. And a new character called Victor Belmont, who actually had a whose name kind of lived on in Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, kind of a wink and a nod to this lost thing. So, yeah, we actually have a prototype for it, I believe. So the article here is actually different from the one I found earlier. Ash. I thought that when I saw this, I thought it was a bit more to it. So if you guys want to go over that, I want to see if I can find the other article that really well went into the details of what this Castlevania Resurrection was going to be all about.
You know,
well, I'm just watching the video of it right now.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, the video is playing for our audience as well. It does look pretty cool. And I have to say, 22 years ago, that would have been 1999. And I worked as a tester at Konami during that time. I never saw this.
Oh, wow.
Though.
Wow.
I saw
it. So it might have been next door to you, probably.
There we go. Yeah, there was EA close to Konami's office in Redwood Shores, California. I think one or both of those offices closed down.
You know what this reminds me of? Like, looking at the gameplay or the little bit of gameplay, it reminds me of like a mix between Castlevania 64 and Castlevania Lament of Innocence. Like a hybrid of the two.
It's kind of right in that middle area, so it works kind of as that middle ground. Okay, so it was Niche Gamer is the article I saw that really went into a lot of stuff here went into this. So the game was developed in-house by Konami and was likened to be a reboot of the series, focusing on Sonya and Victor. The prototype demo, which is a pre-E3 demo, reportedly features five environments and a boss fight that corresponds to a stage in the game. As the game is clearly a beta build, most of the areas are not connected with each other, but they are accessible from the start menu, with one of them not loading apparently. The game was supposed to be set in 1666 and was going to be the 17th game in the franchise, taking place just prior to the original series protagonist Simon Belmont in the original Castlevania. The cancellation was reportedly due to a number of things, according to art director Greg Ordoyan, like disagreements between the Japanese and American teams and the Dreamcast's short-lived life. Resurrection would have followed Sonya Belmont, who was the first series' first female Belmont, only female Belmont, really, who previously appeared in Castlevania Legends. The new character Victor was supposed to be an 1800s era vampire hunter that abandoned his lineage only to run away from the region in fear of his destiny as a vampire hunter. Reportedly, the main antagonist of the game would be a female vampire of some kind and not Dracula. So, just really, really cool things in here. Like, what I really would have killed to see what this would have ended up being like, and I can't wait to see more of it. And if this gets available online and I can play it, I'm playing it.
Oh yeah. This is super cool. I just love stuff like this in general, whether it's Castlevania or anything else, where just lost games from the past resurface all these years later and are. Their prototypes actually still exist and they're preserved for other people to check out and see what would have been. I love stuff like this.
Yeah.
And the whole Sonya Belmont angle is weird. I mean, even as a kind of a middle of the road, more casual Castlevania fan in terms of the lore, I know it, but not nearly as well as Derek. I know Sonya Belmont wasn't exactly the most popular Belmont and she wasn't exactly that
it's
important.
It's not that she was unpopular. It's just that her existence
got wiped.
Led to
much.
A
like,
lot of
from canon.
Continuity errors.
Right, oh, sure.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting that they were going to take the angle of having her star again, which I think would have been cool.
Mm-hmm. I'd be cool if they revisit this. Because I know you're a huge Castlevania guy as well.
Yeah, I'd be cool if they revisit this, to be honest with you. Like, it'd be dope to see, like, whatever, if they ever go back to Castlevania again or Konami or somebody at some point, it'd be cool to at least, you know, revisit this concept and maybe iterate on it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they already did, for all we know. Maybe, as you were saying, this looked a bit like Castlevania 64 crossed with Lament of Innocence. So maybe this is kind of one of those things where, like with the Wind Waker, where ideas that were ultimately cut from that game were repurposed later on in games like
You know
Twilight
who I
Princess
would love to
such.
Hear from about this? Like, it would be a good person to ask about this. Igarashi.
Oh,
son. Koji Igarashi, just sit him down and ask him about this and see if he has anything to say about it. That'd be mm-hmm. really interesting. See if he actually like thought about this or maybe like, you know, maybe heard something about this, you know, at the time that he was like making his own games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would have been really interesting to hear. And as Juan points out in the chat, I was going to mention this, but Juan said it first. They're just waiting for the Mega Man Legends 3 prototype to be leaked. That, I hope that...
That'd be amazing.
What happened with this today with Castlevania happens with Legends 3 someday. Because I know Derek and I both would just be tearing that thing apart.
I'd be right there with you guys. I'm not the world's biggest Mega Man fan, but Legends holds a very special place in my heart. I love that series so much. I have Mega Man 64 somewhere.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I was just saying I have the 64 version of Legends somewhere
My
house. I don't know where, but yeah, I mean, it's a PlayStation franchise, let's be clear. But I desperately want to play that prototype of 3. It was one of those things followed it so closely, and when it got announced that they were shelving it, I was just heartbroken over that.
Yeah, we never get to play a prototype, I just hope that someday the design doc is surfaces so we can at least know what the story would have been. Because I've certainly have my guesses, and I've drawn my own conclusions based on just educated guessing, and I think I kind of know where they were going with it, but there is a story concept out there somewhere for Mega Man Legends 3 that we would have known what was going to happen. And I want to know, even if I never get to play it, I want to know
what
the story
is. Someone at Capcom's got it.
What they did for Half-Life Episode 3.
Yeah, the Half-Life thing. Yeah, that would be so cool.
Oh, man. That is, I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole of third sequels in games, but what the hell? I think that whenever somebody is able to nail down the story of what the hell happened with Half-Life 3, it'll be the wildest read ever, because it's not Valve is on hard times or anything, but they can't seem to make a game.
Really weird.
You know, Gabe Newell just needs to come out and say, yeah, we don't really make games anymore because Steam keeps us rich or something. But I mean, just own up to the fact that you're no longer making the game, or say literally anything about it at this point.
Now, on the flip side of that, though, if they decided to actually like put pedal to the metal and actually sit down and make it, you realize how awesome of a teaser they have set up for that. All they have to do is just put on the screen Half-Life 3 and the word confirmed, and everybody will lose their damn mind.
Honestly, they don't even need to go that far. They could probably just put the number 3 on a screen and people would fill in the blanks.
Well, it reminds me of it reminds me of a really mean Resetera thread title that I saw probably last year, several months back, where it was Half-Life, three screenshots.
Oh, no,
it was obviously deliberate. It was so mean, but yeah. I couldn't help but just crack up because it was so good.
Many internet people cried that day.
Yeah.
Everybody points out, they did make Half-Life Alyx, but nobody's really played that because it's VR only.
Yeah, but that's not really 3, though. Like that's like, I thought it was kind of like the episodes for Half-Life 2, kind of, from my understanding. I never played it, though.
Mega Conrad points out, apparently only one journalist got to play the Mega Man Legends 3 prototype. Right, and as I understand it, if I remember correctly, that same journalist was privy to like a sit-down talking about what the game's story would have been. And we still don't know. I don't think that's ever been reported on. I don't think they've ever spilled the beans.
That is a hell of a journalist that they kept that secret for how long.
That's why I hold out
NDAs,
hope that one of these days.
Like massive NDAs, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Oh, goodness. Well, let's go ahead and end off with one more story. Nice feel-good story to end off the day. And a man has crafted the world's largest playable Nintendo Switch that he actually donated to the St. Jude's Children's Hospital. And it's in 4K. It uses a 4K screen. But yeah, he basically made a giant Switch. All the buttons work, 650% bigger. It's, I think, 30 inches by 70 inches, I think is what it is.
Yeah, that's a big
Switch.
Yeah,
65 pounds.
Looking at the picture now, that's
huge.
Yeah,
30 by 70 and 65 pounds.
Dang.
Do the analog sticks on this thing
work? Imagine trying to play
on
Smash on this.
Oh, yeah, he shows himself playing Mario Kart in this video.
Yeah, now, right now, in this case, he is using a pro controller, it looks like, to play on the giant Switch, but
I mean, it would sync to a pro controller, but he does use
the buttons. But it works. Yeah, it works.
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, I'm looking. Oh, wait, he uses the analog stick?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a different part of the video where he's actually using the analog stick on the giant Switch.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Looking at
Jared Engelhardt, little kid's going to be able to play it. You don't know kids. Like, I could totally see one kid like, all right, you get on the analog stick, I'll get on the buttons, and we can work together and make this happen and just be silly fun. You know?
Yeah. This is so cool. He plays Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Fortnite, and this thing's in 4K. Wow. That's so cool. And what a great cause, too, to build it and donate it to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Could you imagine if the sticks on that giant Switch drift?
Oh, God.
You know, I have a feeling this guy probably prevented Joy-Con drift on this thing, if I had to guess.
Like, that would be a smart idea.
Yeah.
That is really cool, amazing.
I like it.
Yeah, I feel like, Steve, you'd probably love watching the breakdown of how this is built and stuff.
Yeah, I'm currently working on a sleeper PC project. My dad doesn't watch this show, so it's fine. It's for him. which, if you don't know, a sleeper PC is like you get an old, super ugly, like 1990s computer, and then you put like really hardcore, awesome components inside, so it looks like a piece of crap on the outside, but performs amazing. And I was trying to figure out how to make like a floppy disk drive that would contain some type of modern storage media. So, and that is like a challenge well beyond my ability. I couldn't imagine taking a Switch and turning it into this.
So here, actually, might still have Joy-Con drift, because I just watched a later part of the video, and it's literally, he has a Joy-Con inside the big one. It just sort of attaches to it, and it like clicks the buttons with those bigger ones, and that's how it works.
Oh, wow.
He has all these wires and stuff attached to just a regular Joy-Con to get all the buttons to work as they should. That's crazy.
I mean, that's
apparently
cool.
The guy who did this.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's just like an actuator that moves them for him. Oh, yeah.
I guess the guy who did this is a well-known YouTuber named Michael Pick, who is a craftsman, and he's known for previously building mega and bite-sized replications of various pieces of tech. Hmm. So this is something that this guy is known for, and clearly you can tell why.
More power to him. This is awesome.
This is an incredible feat.
Yeah, and I do want to say that I love St. Jude's Children's Hospital. That's a great... great group of people to support. My long departed grandma supported them my entire life, and so I've learned a bit about them, and they are such a worthy cause. I mean, they help sick children. Like, how bad could you be?
How
could
you? Yeah. Classy Mudkip says, imagine rolling up to a Smash tournament with this bad boy. Can you imagine? Yeah.
I mean, the next logical step is to make a gigantic Switch dock connected to an absurdly large TV. I mean, it all
has like a movie hooked up to the theater.
Something crazy.
Right.
That is so cool.
I love this, though.
I do. I love the idea that children who are you know, have a diminished quality of life can enjoy something like this. That, you know, it's publicity for him for sure, but it's the right kind. It's really cool that he did something like this and just gave it away.
You can imagine kids having a lot of fun being blown away by the size of it and just like all wanting to put their hands all over it to see and how it works. Like, oh, it does work. Yeah. And
well, I mean, I remember.
Post up,
I want to say it was 2019 when we all went to E3 and Sega had the gigantic Genesis controller there
for
the Genesis Mini.
Yeah. For the Genesis Mini, I loved that so much.
Like, even as an old man, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Somewhere there's a video of me playing Sonic on it.
Playing Ghouls
and I love
that.
I can't imagine, had I been a child and seen that, how excited I would have been.
I got to play the original Super Mario Brothers with a giant NES controller, which has been seen around, but it was at MAGFest, I think, one year. And maybe more than one year, but I got to play it, and like, you know, it's such a giant controller that, you know, you use both of your hands just to push down on one side of the D-pad. It's ridiculous, but it's really cool.
You know what's funny? Like, because I remember something like this at PAX East one year when Arcade1Up had brought like their new arcade cabinets and stuff. They were showing, they had Marvel versus Capcom 1 playing on this giant arcade cabinet. I remember with the giant sticks that we had to use like that. So very similar idea, but we were just playing Marvel in that same way in like this huge arcade cabinet. It was ridiculous.
Nice.
It was fun.
That's really awesome. Cool.
That's pretty amazing. You gotta love it. But just a fun little feel good story to end things off with. But with that, I believe we've covered all the major headlines from today's news. Before we sign off, though, Jake James Lugo, where can we find you at?
I am in a lot of places, but my main spots are YouTube. It's youtube.com/GamersWithGains channel, or just search Jake James Lugo in the search bar. Show some love, sub. I'm on Twitter at Jake James Lugo. I'm always on there every single day posting stuff up, and on Instagram as well at Jake James Lugo. Again, posting tons of gaming stuff related to what I'm doing and just stuff that I'm enjoying every single day. It's just a lot of fun things that I know you guys will love. Hopefully, you know, you guys enjoy it. Appreciate it.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, of course, we'll have links to all of those pages in the description below for those of you watching the VOD version. So make sure to check that out and subscribe and check out Jake James's content. And thanks again for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Yeah, you guys are awesome. Again, I love the work that you do. I love the convos. Again, I just love talking about games and stuff. And you guys do a lot of great things that a lot of people love to enjoy. So keep it up. Keep up the great work. Keep doing more.
Thank you.
Well, thanks
so much. And of course, we got to give a thank you to all the patrons. You guys are, you know, amazing. Let us do this. We can't ever be thankful enough. It really is impossible.
Absolutely.
Honestly. And we just have to give a special thanks to all of our patrons at the producer tier for helping to make this show happen. It really is all thanks to you. And in addition, a massive, massive thank you to our patrons at the executive producer tier and above. And those fine folks include Jared Edinger, Brandon Bovia, Rob Arman X, Dan and Twistle, Z Patty, Hyrule Hermit, Sky Blue Flames, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Michael Phone, Floating Mew, Echo Carroll, Christopher, The D-Pad, Vesmio, Waffle King, Nick Waterman, Kitty Kong Facts, Angel Martinez, Vedran Hotik, Macalau, John, Joshua Hunter, Evernight Studio, Benny Yao, Shadow the Cat, Azran 127, Ken Roulet 09, Jake Pelka, Geller, Joseph Rutkin, Titus Malvolio, Charlie Bird, Lucky Wonderfish, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, excuse me, Charles Zaz, Douglas Chomix, Andrew Medeiros, RMM, Phantom 23, Patrick Harrison, Becca, Rox the Cat, Fizzy Wakehoid, Flaming Highwayman, Sean Garrett, The Legend of Groose, Eddie B, Kai Ed, Kit Fisto, West Egg, Master Lynx, Sean Davis, Deaneth, Jackson Jordan, Michael McCall, Matthew Wong, Ashish Joshi, Goron Amber, Straight Lace, Hubi, Wolf X Blake and Moon Macarons, Kane, Captain Finlandia, 60 Minutes in 60 Seconds, The Game Orb, Dano the Artist, Synchro Lord, Brainchild, Rosa Bowling.
Hi, Mom.
Scuff 196, Skull Kid Tiger, AJB Cool, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Phantom Project, Wheezy Penguin, and Anthony Wilson Jr. Thank you all so, so much for your continued support. It just warms my heart, and really, thank you so much. But remember remember that you too can become a patron over at patreon.com/GVGaming, where you can watch today's news tonight live for as little as $5 a month. Thank you all so much for watching. And if you like this video, be sure to subscribe to Good Vibes Gaming for more good times like these. And until next time, good night and good vibes. Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Later.
Bye, everyone.